take two. Here we go. Set up.
Test. All right, welcome to Security Guy Radio, Black Hat 2016.
Thank you.
What's your name, sir?
It's really good to be here. Justin Harvey, Chief Security Officer with Fidelis Cybersecurity.
And what do you guys do?
We are an incident response firm, and we also have products and threat research teams. So our products span network security analytics, and we have an incident response platform.
Oh, and I like this research team, because a lot of companies have analytics,
right?
But they don't define it as a research team specifically.
Right.
In other words, you can analyze your data you get from a customer, but you're saying you're going outside that, looking at threats outside the client environment and putting that into your calculation.
That's right. We see it as a force multiplier effect. Essentially, the problem with cybersecurity today is there's not enough trained incident responders, not enough cybersecurity people.
Yeah.
And products can only take a customer or an organization so far. So what we do is we have a dedicated threat research team of over 25 people that are interpreting our customer data and looking for threats in the open source and working with other companies to share and exchange threat intelligence.
So your customers are not just calling you saying, hey, I think I got hacked. You actually have a relationship with them. You're understanding everything happening with our company beforehand.
Right, and that's actually one of our big selling points. We're not a managed service per se,
right,
but we are helping our customers look for threats within their data, and we're also working with other security firms in order to take the latest threat research, emerging vulnerabilities and emerging threats, and notify our customers by examining their data.
Now, is that unique to the business? Seems like it's a little unique.
I think it is unique to the business.
Yeah.
But it is a trend. More and more security companies, cybersecurity companies with products are transmitting a little bit of data back up into the cloud in order to look for trends and vulnerabilities.
That's where it is.
From the client. So that's how you're doing it.
In other words, feed
me the data. We're going to sift through it. And then we have, in the case we need to use it, we know what we're looking at, right?
Right.
And if all clients had their data that way, we'd solve a lot of problems because we could have people in different companies doing different things, bad guys, that are in some kind of collective group that are trying to do something, right?
Absolutely.
One of the things that we're seeing a lot in, I think it's pretty common among all the different people that we've talked to is your capabilities are limited on how well you can prepare against a cyber attack based on how robust your organization is. So are you... Do you agree with that? And do you think that really it's only the really big companies that have a staff that can really look at this data? What happens to the small and the medium guys out there?
That's a big gap in the industry. Yeah. The large companies, they can afford to build a security operations team of 30 to 50 people. They can afford to have an incident response team of 10 to 15, a red team that's constantly probing the organization, looking for vulnerabilities and exposures. The outside of the Fortune 50 or the 100, that's really where I think managed services comes into play and our type of products where we're looking on their network, we're looking on their endpoints, and when something anomalous comes up, we're able to identify it within our own data sets.
Now, we've heard a lot about real time, and that's defined differently by different people.
It is.
Right, so how do you guys define it?
So It basically, in real time, is when we're seeing something without the session being completely finished. Let's talk about network for a sec.
Okay.
One of our unique capabilities within the network is that we stream every network session into memory.
Oh.
And even if it's not completed, let's take an executable, for instance. When an executable goes over the wire, many technologies like sandboxes, they need 100% of that file to be downloaded before you can run it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So what we do is we stream it into memory, and we're already picking apart the executable in memory.
Like a buffer.
Yes, exactly. We're reading it right off the buffer. I would consider that real time, but most of security these days is really near time, where an action happens and there's a there's another reaction to that to analyze it.
Sure.
Well, it's better than Target, whose real time was, what, a month before they figured it out or something?
Or others that we've heard about. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable how much vulnerabilities are out there. And even if they do know about them, they either don't implement a change or they don't think that they'll get hit. It's a huge problem.
One of the other big problems that we have to solve in the industry is when a CVE, a common vulnerability or exposure, is identified, meaning, let's say, there's an Adobe Flash exploit, and that is discovered on Monday. There's two things that need to happen that a company sees. One, they need to go back into the past to see if they've been hit by that previously. And B, they have to look in all of their endpoints and in their network now to see if it's there. And I guess there's a third component, which is they need a patch.
Right.
And there's no guarantee that the vendor has released a patch at the same time as the vulnerability.
Oh, no, that would make too much sense.
I can't remember who we spoke with, but they said there is a huge problem because Adobe is not in a hurry to put out that release because they got to do all their internal things, and it's a business necessity.
Yeah.
We get all that, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter when my network is compromised because of your breach, and I can't wait a week for the press release.
Right.
How do you guys handle that? How do you try to get ahead of the press release and handle those kind of things?
Well, that goes right back to our threat research team. When a CVE is discovered, or common vulnerability is discovered, mm-hmm. or even if it's, sometimes we get a lot of the information beforehand because we're working with other cybersecurity companies. Microsoft is one of our biggest customers, so mm-hmm. sometimes we get some threat intel from them. Once that is identified, then we can go through all of our customers' historical data. Actually, we don't collect or store all of our customers' data. We actually do something called metadata collection. Mm-hmm. So there's just a little bit of tiny information that's coming up to our cloud research center. And then we look in the past, and we also can write network analytics rules to determine if that happens again in the future and kill it. Because there may not be even be a signature. So traditional intrusion detection systems on the network, they're looking at IP addresses and signatures. We can even look at the behavior or some of the bits and bytes within that transaction to find it.
Wow.
So what's happening? I asked everybody this question. What do you think the number one threat is right now to our networks? And I know it's not a one.
It's a multifaceted answer,
but
right?
I mean, sometimes, well, a couple of people have said, hey, this is the thing. What
the
do you think?
The defining thing.
Well, I'll break it into a couple components for you. The number one threat right now to consumers, to the listeners at home, is ransomware.
Yep.
Okay. That's all we hear about. If you go on to Google Trends mm-hmm. and you type in the two search terms, ransomware and data breach, you'll see that ransomware has just skyrocketed
exploded.
In the last 6 months.
Right.
And that is for a few reasons. Number one is malware as a service. Mm-hmm. Cyber criminals don't need to infect people anymore because they can go farm that out.
Right.
Secondly is the ability to operate in cyberspace in an anonymous manner or anonymous fashion. That's due to the onion router or the dark web. Now they can essentially move around with impunity. Mm-hmm. And the third is the ability to anonymously get paid Bitcoin.
So without the middleman.
Exactly. Yeah. So you put all of those together, it's the perfect ecosystem for cybercrime.
I said this on a couple of the shows. My parents didn't raise any dumb kids, but I would have no idea where to get Bitcoins from. I'm serious. You lock my computer up, I'm screwed because I wouldn't know where to go get them.
Yeah.
And that's we're helping a lot of our clients with that because we do work a lot of ransomware cases for large organizations, and they call us and they say, A, should we pay? And B, if we choose to pay, how do we even do this?
So or how do you prevent it? Or how do you prevent it from happening in the future? I mean, what does, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about the four options that you have. You either can decrypt it, you can pay it, you can trash your computer. There's only a few options that you have. So what is the talking point for your company about ransomware, especially for some of these smaller businesses and consumers that are out there?
It is a risk calculation. It is simple. It's simply the numbers. You have to take how much they want, compare it to how long it would take to recover from backup if you have the backup, and how much of a service loss you can endure. The hospitals are paying because they cannot endure a service loss.
They can't afford the backup, right?
Exactly.
The backup, they can't do it more
exactly.
often enough.
Yeah. So they've got life. They have to preserve life, and they have to have a high uptime due to life support systems.
Yeah,
and many times they pay. So it's really a risk calculation.
Interesting.
When you look at preventing it, no vendor on the planet can prevent ransomware, even though some of
it's an honest statement.
Absolutely. And what we recommend is, of course, everyone is going to get up here and say, number one, keep good backups. But it doesn't stop there. You really need to be able to have complete visibility of your network and endpoint to understand when you are getting hit. There are ways to detect ransomware in your enterprise or on your computer before it can actually decrypt the whole thing.
You know, that's a great question I formulated in my small little brain. I never understood how quickly this
will
works.
Take hold.
So I get into your network. Does it take me a day to encrypt a hospital's network? Does it take me a couple minutes? What's it take?
Let's look at the numbers. One PC, in order to encrypt probably a few gigs, that'll take a few minutes. Yeah, under an hour to
do. But they're moving laterally and vertically to find the right computer,
right?
Which that takes time.
That does take time. Or sometimes they're going after shares.
Now, so it'll lay dormant during that period.
It depends.
Okay.
So the first thing it's going to do is, and ransomware has different strains, and they all act differently, so I'm generalizing. So the first thing that they're going to do is probably take an accounting of what kind of machine they're on and what kind of shares they have access to, and then probably just iterate through all of the drives, the C drive, the D drive, all the way down to the Z drive, right, network shares, and start encrypting them. And so... to do terabytes and terabytes, that's going to take hours and hours. So it's going file by file, encrypting.
So you have the ability to kind of stop them in the mid range
if you've got the right endpoint security, you're
right.
saying.
Right. And one of those we didn't come up with this method, but I think it's a really good solution, which is creating a canary directory.
Okay.
Creating a directory that's a lure. And you watch that directory, and you watch the fake files in there.
Right.
And if anything touches those fake files or even deletes them, boom, that may be ransomware and jump on it.
How effective is access control to preventing malware? I mean, is that just another tool in the bag, or is that, because we're hearing a lot about, we just had an interview that was all about access control and the different dimensions of that. How well is that a defense to
ransomware? It's critical. It is critical to have good access control to not only control who has administrative access, but to be able to audit that.
Yeah.
One of the trends we're seeing here at Black Hat is the explosion of UBA vendors, user behavior analytics vendors. And these companies, all they do is look at Windows logs and see where people are moving to establish a baseline to identify
what's abnormal,
when someone's,
right?
Yeah.
What's an anomaly?
And
it's a behavioral piece.
I got in this argument all the time at the studios, right? IT thought they owned, by the way, IT stole the word security. When you said security in 1996 on Yahoo, it meant physical.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean physical now, right?
It doesn't.
So the argument's always been, you know, this is an IT problem. And I, to this day, say it ultimately comes back to what? It comes back to physical because there's a human involved.
Right.
The computer itself has not become self-aware yet. And sending out ransomware on its own. It's coming, right? It's not there yet.
That's
all the people problem. You got to solve for the people. And I think I'm glad we're solving for the people problem now.
Yeah.
Working on it and starting the discussion. That's what it's about.
It's important.
It's a huge piece.
Right.
Now, what percentage of successful ransomware attacks are because a human made an error? Is that in the 90s or the 40s, 100%? Or is there a way for ransomware to really attack without a user error?
This is my opinion. I don't have the empirical data to back this up.
We never let facts get in the way on screen.
We are just talking here.
I don't want to be called by the Washington Post and given
the
Pinocchio rating.
Will not
but,
do that.
I would say 95%, probably higher than that, because ransomware doesn't infect your PC or your network from them sending it directly to your endpoint. It comes via a spearfish. It comes via an attachment.
Mm-hmm.
It comes via from a user who doesn't know any better or chooses to disregard normal
Now, why don't they come
guidelines?
The other way? Because it's easier to do it with phishing?
With firewalls and with the networks that we have today, it's really hard to touch an endpoint, someone's
the brute
laptop.
Force type attack.
Yeah, the way inside of the network.
The security. Yeah. Well, see, and that's what's changing in the conversation. Because it used to be, let's build up your whole network. Let's build your security profile for all these brute force attacks. Well, these people are smart. And they said, okay, so we can't get through the firewall. We'll go around it.
Yeah. And we're going to get Johnny to click on this attachment. And that's, I think, why you see this explosion of analytics, behavior, people that are looking at why somebody's checking their phone or their mobile device 70,000 times a week. Right?
Or why someone from HR is mapping to the engineering drive.
Right.
That should never happen.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's changing. It's changing the way security is actually built, where it's looking into the future. I mean, that's what people are talking about, is if we can predict what happens 99% of the time, we see an anomaly. That's what they're trying to do, right?
Exactly.
Is look into the future and say, that's not right.
Find the lateral movement within the organization.
Pretty soon, I don't know what the next 5 years looks like, but it's getting very interesting.
Well, I was joking the other day. We've done 30 shows.
Yeah.
And at the
37.
Well,
is it 37? This is number 37.
Wow. So at show number 30, I was happy, and at show number 31, I was depressed.
Yeah.
Because, it's an up and down roller coaster here.
Well, because on 31, we were talking about staffing and how our next vulnerability is not enough people with the brains.
Well, you said it.
Yeah.
To do all this.
Zero unemployment. But the problem that we're seeing, and you back me up on this.
You can't find the bodies.
You can't find the bodies, but even more so than that, once you do find the bodies, you can't retain them.
Yeah,
so you've got this cycle
hired
of,
by your competition across the street for
how do you guys see that,
Rob?
I mean, you're a huge company in this space. How do you see that playing out over the next 5 years?
We see our strategy is to act as a force multiplier. Mm-hmm. We have to build our products and services to enable the our customers to be able to do what they're doing with less people.
All right.
It used to be, our tagline used to be expert tools for experts. But the problem is there's just simply not enough experts out there.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
And that's why our firm is doing so well, is because there are so many breaches, intrusions, incidents that even if a company has an incident response plan, even if they have a few security guys and gals that are really good,
they need help.
When the stuff hits the fan, they really do need the experts to do the forensics on that.
Well,
I feel better.
We're happy that there are experts out there.
I'm happy after
and
this interview.
I think so. Don't click on an attachment. That's, I think, the key takeaway.
Another thing that I'm really heartened with is the industry-level cooperation.
People working together.
We've heard that. That's good.
So that's huge.
Our firm, Fidelis, worked with both CrowdStrike, who was the initial responder into the DNC breach two weeks ago,
okay.
or actually in June. We backed them up by looking at the malware and the evidence. So did Mandiant / FireEye.
And then assuming you guys shared the intelligence, right?
We absolutely did. Yeah. And there was a bill last year in December that Congress stuck in, the CISA bill, the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, that's supposed to help the government share information with the private sector. Well, you know, we're not seeing that. What we are seeing is cybersecurity firms all
helping each other.
Yes.
And the government not really playing a role.
Exactly. We're doomed if we rely on those guys.
Man, we don't have enough space on that hard drive there to keep talking about these
Justin,
things.
Justin, fascinating conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You want to come on the show and do a 60-minute?
Absolutely. I'm there for you.
Give us your website again.
www.fidelissecurity.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Fidelis Cyber.
Excellent. Thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great interview.
So
thanks
much,
a lot.
Jack,
have a great day. Thanks.
Very interesting.
Hey!